After a confusing 24 hours, Burkina Faso has a new military leader, and a U.S. girl barred from classes by concerns about Ebola returns to school. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Burkina Faso's military says it has chosen Lieutenant Colonel Yacouba Isaac Zida, number two of the country's presidential guard, as interim head of state. VOA's Anne Look has more from Dakar.
The Burkina Faso military released a statement Saturday confirming that Lieutenant Colonel Yacouba Isaac Zida is in charge of the transition. General Pingrinoba Zagre read the statement. He says the country's military leadership informs the nation that Lieutenant Colonel Zida has been retained unanimously to lead the transition. The statement said that any apparent confusion or contradiction were a byproduct of the fast pace at which events unfolded. Mr. Compaoré resigned Friday in the face of continued protests. Anne Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The leader of Nigeria's Islamic extremist group Boko Haram says 219 schoolgirls kidnapped in Chibok earlier this year have been converted to Islam and married off. The spokesman and leader says the girls now in their marital homes have each memorized two chapters of the Quran. Nigeria had said earlier it was in negotiations with the group to release the girls, but the leader denies this claim, saying he did not know who claimed to represent Boko Haram in the negotiations. Islamic State militants have executed 50 more tribesmen in Iraq's Anbar province as part of a mass killing campaign being carried out by the group. Local sources say shooting of the members of the Sunni Muslim Albu Nimr tribe occurred on Friday. A few days ago, Iraqi officials said 150 bodies from that tribe, which resisted the Islamic State advance west of Baghdad, were found buried in a mass grave near the city of Ramadi. This is VOA News. A U.S. newspaper says a 7-year-old girl in the northeastern state of Connecticut has returned to her classroom after being barred from school because of fears that she was exposed to Ebola virus while traveling in Africa. The New York Times says the girl was allowed back into her school Friday, rescinding the school system's earlier decision to keep her out of class for 21 days. That's the time it takes for symptoms to emerge. The Times said the girl and her father traveled to Nigeria in October for a family event, but there are no known Ebola patients in Nigeria. The newspaper said the family sued the school system and the two sides settled the case. Chinese authorities worked to clarify their response to the West African outbreak this week as governments around the world are trying to determine the best way to prevent the virus from reaching their people and borders. VOA's William Hyde reports.
Last week, China's foreign ministry said that travelers from West African countries who showed no signs of the virus would be allowed to travel without restriction. But other government agencies and Chinese media reports have described a different policy. According to Chinese health authorities and interviews VOA has conducted, anyone visiting from the three Ebola-hit West African countries must self-quarantine for 3 weeks. But how the quarantine is implemented is not clear, and health officials are refusing to provide more information. Bill Ide, Beijing.
U.S. investigators are looking into the crash of a space tourism craft in California on Friday that killed one pilot and seriously injured the other. The spacecraft, dubbed Spaceship Tube, came down shortly after release from a plane during a test flight over the Mojave Desert. Manufactured by Virgin Atlantic, the founder, British billionaire Richard Branson, and his chief executives are meeting with authorities today to investigate. Stuart Witt is with Mojave Space and Airport.
This was a peer test. This was not a public event. So, I will tell you from my eyes and my ears, I detected nothing that appeared abnormal. I know I was briefed that the plume would look different this time than it had in the past, and it did.
Both the crew members were test pilots for a company called Scaled Composites, which is a Northrop Grumman subsidiary, which said the flight was using a new rocket fuel formula. Secretary of State John Kerry will meet later this month with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif as the deadline for agreement on Iran's nuclear program approaches. The State Department says the meetings will be between Mr. Zarif and Mr. Kerry in Oman on November 9th and 10th. European Foreign Union Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton will also be there. Palestinians and Israeli security forces fighting in the West Bank after the partial opening again of Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque for Friday prayers. Palestinians protested near Hebron and a checkpoint after Friday prayers, calling for a day of rage. I'm Marty Johnson reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington. Burkina Faso has a new confirmed leader following confusion over who is in charge after protesters forced longtime leader Blaise Compaoré to step down.
It's not pleasant news for anybody in our country, especially when we share a direct border with them.
A top Ghanaian official expresses concern about the political situation in Burkina Faso. Oh, our details.
There are a number of people who think this is their chance now to take up that position. Each one wants to be the front runner as they prepare to select a presidential candidate.
And Zambian workers express concern about political infighting within the ruling Patriotic Front Party. We'll have details. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Burkina Faso's military says it has unanimously chosen Lieutenant Colonel Yakuba Zeda, the number two of the country's presidential guard, as interim head of state. President Blaise Compaoré resigned Friday in the face of violent protests after nearly three decades in power. He fled with his family to Ivory Coast. Meanwhile, Ghanaian Deputy Foreign Minister says President John Dramani Mahama, who heads the Economic Community of West African State, or ECOWAS, a regional bloc, is working hard to help resolve the ongoing political uncertainty in neighboring Burkina Faso. Yamin told me earlier that the government in Accra is displeased with the current political situation in Burkina Faso.
As a government, we are not happy also for any disturbances that is found in the sub-region, knowing very well that any disturbance in other countries could extend to other countries. And if not, the war itself extending beyond the boundaries of the country. You have displaced citizens also crossing over to your country. And so it's not something that any country would wish that its neighbor goes through it. So even though I may not be speaking for government as an official spokesperson or mandated person to speak on this issue, it's not a pleasant news for anybody in our country, especially when we share a direct border with them.
There were reports that former President Blaise Compaoré has sought refuge in Ghana to be protected by the Ghanaian administration. What can you tell me about this? Can you confirm or deny this report?
There are rumors all over, and people are citing Ghana, people are citing other countries as well. What I can say is that we don't have any clue as to whether he is here or he's not around. But what I know is that the President of the Republic, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, is currently the head of ECOWAS. And he, being a peace-loving president, would wish that the sub-region that he has now sees utmost peace. And so he will use all available laws at his disposal to make sure that calm comes back to the sub-region, specifically the people of Burkina Faso. But as to whether Blaise Compaoré is in his country or outside his country, I am not in a position to.
Has President Mahama sent emissaries as head of ECOWAS to the country to go and assess the situation and try to help the country in this difficult time? And is the foreign ministry helping this process, if I may ask?
Well, like I stated earlier, the president is the head of ECOWAS. And so you don't need to be told that he has taken a step in this before you get to know that he will take a step. That is his duty as we speak with you, and you can trust the judgment and the leadership style of the Ghanaian president, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, to make sure that all available means of ensuring that there is peace in that country, that turns to other countries in the sub-region, is achieved. And that one, I can confidently tell you that His Excellency is on top of the issue.
Joseph Yamin is Deputy Foreign Minister. He spoke with me from Ghana's Ashanti Regional Capital, Kumasi. Nearly every African head of state swore in his oath of office to defend his nation's constitution. But constitutional scholars in Africa say they are seeing two trends. One, a disturbing tendency for African leaders to try to change the constitution to stay in power. And two, a wave of public protests in defense of the constitution. As Burkina Faso's president steps down following violent protests in Ouagadougou, VOA's Anita Powell looks at this continental trend from VOA's Southern Africa Bureau in Johannesburg.
In the last decade, at least a dozen African leaders, among them the rulers of Algeria, Cameroon, Chad, Djibouti, Uganda, and Zimbabwe, have amended their national constitutions to allow them to extend their time in office. The men who lead those six countries have been in power collectively for just shy of 150 years. The latest attempt to prolong power came from Burkina Faso's leader of 27 years, Blaise Compaoré. His recent attempts to extend his rule through constitutional amendment were met with fierce resistance in the capital, Ouagadougou, and eventually military intervention. Constitutional scholars and analysts see this as a worrying trend, and one that has little justification. David Bilchitz is a law professor at the University of Johannesburg and has dedicated much of his career to studying constitutions. He notes that just because African leaders have adapted from the old tactic of taking power by coup to the more sophisticated strategy of maintaining power through constitutional change, well, that doesn't make it right.
I think we must distinguish, and it's a very important distinction to make in the context of some of the developments in African in relation to constitutions, is the use of formal legal processes often to mask what is substantively undemocratic.
James Stent is a researcher at Good Governance Africa, a think tank. He says changing the constitution to stay in power is not good governance.
This is a pretty typical example of bad governance. The AU, in fact, stands against the extension of presidential limits. There's really no legal or moral basis in which to extend rule beyond the constitutional limits.
Increasingly, the public is losing its tolerance for bad governance. Stent notes that the growing trend for Africa's citizens to push back is positive.
The outrage is encouraging. It means, for one, that people are more aware of their rights in a democracy, and perhaps also that these stories of resistance to regimes being successful, as we saw with the Arab Spring, that citizens who previously may have been unwilling to stand up to the government for fear of reprisals from the state are now more willing to do so and are willing to stand up for democratic processes.
The experts say not all efforts to extend power are necessarily bad. Bilchitz noted that the late U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt ran for re-election 3 times, defying what was then American political tradition to steer his nation through World War II. Roosevelt died during his 4th term in office, and the U.S. Constitution was later amended to limit future presidents to 2 4-year terms in office. Such cases, Bilchitz said, are extraordinary, like a recent decision by Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf to suspend October's special senatorial elections because of the nation's Ebola crisis. This act drew allegations of abuse from her critics. It was a tough call, says Bilchitz.
Well, I think Liberia is undergoing a tremendously trying time, an emergency which is affecting the health and very livelihoods of the people. And so there may be a case for not having an election right at this moment, postponing it under some exception, but that would be for a very limited period and for a very limited purpose.
The trend of constitutional tinkering does not appear to be slowing. Recently, the leaders of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and Burundi, 3 neighbors at the nexus of what is surely the most blood-soaked patch of this continent, all have been accused of looking to the Constitution for an extension. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The leader of Zambia's Congress of Trade Unions, or ZCTU, has expressed concern about the ongoing power struggle within the ruling Patriotic Party, even before the burial of deceased President Michael Sata. Leonard Hikaumba said the power struggle is an affront to the people of Zambia and undermines the cultural sensibilities and respect that should be accorded the late president. Hikaumba told me earlier that it appears that since the current constitution prevents interim President Scott from becoming an elected president, senior members of the PF are elbowing each other to become the candidate of the governing party.
Well, it's very, very disappointing that leaders at that level can ignore and put aside our values and customary traditions, because according to our traditions, we give a lot of respect to the dead. And during this mourning period, people should have concentrated on ensuring that the late president is given a dignified funeral and send-off, other than engaging in this power struggle which we are seeing now.
As a leader of workers in Zambia, what are you hearing from your people based on this report you're hearing about the power wrangling or power struggle within the ruling party, even before the deceased head of state is given a befitting burial by the country?
Well, it looks like there is a conclusion that the vice president may not be eligible to contest the presidency, and therefore there are a number of people who think this is their chance now to take up that position, and each one wants to be the front runner as they prepare to select a presidential candidate. So that's why they are in such a hurry, because each one wants to be the front runner in the race.
I was just speaking with some Zambians who expressed concern that the workers' union have rejected and have warned politicians to put politics aside, and that this is not Zambian, and that this is an affront to the sensibilities of the people and workers of Zambia. Is that the case?
Yeah, it's true. We are saying it's not fair, it's not good traditionally and morally for people to prioritize, you know, getting into this political office without due regard for the current situation we are in. So it's better we concentrate on the issue of mourning. I think after the mourning period, then they can sit down and see who they can present as a candidate for the party.
Why the haste? Because Zambians, as I've been told by even the interim president, the information minister, and so many civil society leaders, that Zambians put aside their sharp political differences when it comes to tragedies of such nature. Former President Levi Wanawaza's death, the former KK11 losing their lives, or the Chipolopolo team losing their lives, and all that. Why the change now when it comes to President Sata's demise?
Well, it's quite sad, and we fail to understand, because it looks like this power struggle has been going on for a while now. I still recall the late president also warning his people that there was only one president, and everyone needed to get busy with work other than trying to, you know, position themselves to take over the leadership. He warned that that was going to divide the party and slow down the progress that was being made. And as a result of this power struggle, we saw camps emerging, and within this party, the different interest groups started even physically confronting each other, which was quite unfortunate.
Leonard Hikaumba is leader of Zambia's Congress of Trade Unions. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Meanwhile, the remains of deceased President Sata arrived in the capital, Lusaka, earlier today. Billy Kazoka is news editor at Radio Phoenix, an independent station in the Zambian capital. He joins us live via telephone link up. Hello, Billy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you?
Well, a bit okay, not very fine.
Good well, my condolences to you and the rest of Zambia. What is the mood in the country following the arrival early this morning of the remains of deceased President Michael Sata?
Well, the mood is very, very, very somber. It's a very touching situation. You know, we went to the Kenneth Kaunda International Airport. Many Zambians started leaving for the airport as early as 7 hours Zambian time. And there was an announcement by Secretary to the Cabinet that people should not go to the main airport, but they should instead line up the streets. But despite that announcement, a lot of people still found their way to the airport.
Now, Billy, there were concerns earlier on by Zambian politicians, civil society groups about the well-being of the deceased president, and there were concerns that officials were not being forthcoming with the health condition of President Sata. Is this being raised even as the country mourns?
Yes, even from the ordinary people, not only the politicians, even from the ordinary people, they were singing songs to say, you are telling us that the president was okay, but what we are witnessing now is the opposite. The president went to London and is now coming back in a casket. And there has been those concerns, not only from the politicians, but also from the ordinary Zambians.
And what has been the response from the government officials so far who responded to some of these criticisms leveled against them?
Well, they are maintaining their position that they are saying that we did disclose that the president has actually left the country. But you see, the bone of contention was that when that announcement came, it was indicating that the president has gone for a medical checkup. And you see, a medical checkup gives a different impression so far as far as this issue is concerned. Well, when you say someone's going for medical checkups, we don't expect them to return in cargo.
We heard reports that there appeared to be some tension in the family of President Sata, some blaming the wife or the first lady for his death. Well, what can you tell me about that latest development?
Well, there are those concerns, but I think those concerns did manifest this morning around the 10 hours when the body arrived. There were a group of party cadres, if you like, or followers. They had patriotic front cadres. They were singing, chanting slogans, saying the one who has made the mistake. They were singing in the local language, but I can interpret you in English. They were saying the one who has made the mistake is the person who has killed Sata, the president.
And who were they referring to?
Well, they were not referring to a particular person, but that was the nature of the song. It was saying the one who has made this mistake is the person who has killed Sata, but they did not sing out the particular name. But that song, yes, it was taking place. They were singing, dancing, moving all over, singing that song at the airport this morning.
Well, we also heard that before the arrival of the remains of the former or deceased president, there appeared to be power struggle within the ruling Patriotic Front Party, and the interim president, Guy Scott, had to put his foot down about this. What can you tell me about it?
Well, the power struggle, yes, is a common knowledge to all Zambians that there has been a power struggle within the ruling party, and all Zambians are aware of that situation, that the power struggle has been existing in the ruling party. And this again did manifest itself at the airport. Yesterday, the acting president, Dr. Guy Scott, did issue a statement stating that this period of mourning, we are not going to allow campaigns of any kind. He also indicated that there will be no cabinet meetings or meetings for central committee members. The central committee is the supreme body of the ruling party. But the acting president did issue an order to say there will be no such meetings of the Central Committee and Cabinet meeting. But what we witnessed this morning at the airport is that there were a group of people, or factions, if you like, contrary to the announcement by, or to the order by the acting president, they did wear T-shirts written, I can give you an example. The other group was wearing T-shirts, they saying, protect Sata's leaders by voting for Mulenga Sata. Mulenga Sata is the son of the late president. The other group also, there's also another group of the former defense minister, Mr. Geoffrey Wariamamba, also known as the GBM. They're also putting T-shirts written in words in solidarity or in support of that former defense minister. So those also did manifest at the airport, those facts in those groups, those tensions were there, yes.
Well, what is the funeral arrangement since the burial is scheduled to be on 11th November?
Well, the funeral arrangement is that the body of the late president is lying at the Murungushi International Conference Center, where many Zambians, ordinary Zambians, will be given an opportunity to pay their last respects. Those who will be able to do so. There is a slight difference in the program, because when the late President Manata died, they did carry his body to all the provincial centers of Zambia. Zambia at that time had nine provinces. Now we had an additional province, which is 10 provinces. So they did move that body of the late President Manata to all the provincial centers. But in this particular case, they are not going to move the body to the provincial centers. What they have decided to do is they put the body at the Murungushi International Conference Center. Those will be able to pay their last respect. They'll be able to do so at the Murungushi International Conference Center. And the burial is set for 11th November 2014.
So how have Zambians in general reacted to these funeral arrangements as well as some of these controversies surrounding the death of former president or deceased president Michael Sata?
Well, when you look at the number of people that went to the airport and also the number of people that lined up the road from the main airport, the Kenneth Kaunda International Airport to Murungushi International Center, you see, that distance, the difference of 25 kilometers, or between 25 and 30 kilometers. But you had people all over throughout that road, multitudes and multitudes of people. They are also singing songs in solidarity of the late president. And as the heads passed through those crowds, they were uncontrollable, wailing, mourning. People were wailing, crying, and others proclaiming that we want to continue, to want the one who come to follow the leaders of what the former president believed in.
Thank you very much, Billy, for your information. Billy Kazoka is a news editor at Radio Phoenix, an independent station. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.
And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University.
Ale shirika na shirina yo. Mama pesa papa.
Right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
Everybody make you jump, jump to the rhythm. Turn by turn, make we the jupa. Oh, I'm be plenty. Today not today, make we the jolly. Get in polo go, I get polo. She una de hear me.
Everybody say, sing tango, say man no be God at all. Yo, wait, who God bless no man can cause Nelua.
If you get money, eat your polo go. You get fine, baby, eat your polo go. If you get pami,
today is better day. We could begin jolly, oh. waka come up from house to work. But see what is man no fit to chop. If no what it is yo. I see some people wanna pull me down. I see some people wanna crush me down. They can never, never stop me now. I cannot Jesus stay by my side.
Hey, hey.
Give me one bottle, one bottle of alcohol. Make I drink away my sorrows. Make I shaky, shaky the go. Because to if you want the reason,
in my super not the reason.
Life is no easy, brother.
In my super not the reason.
I dig it, I dig it, I put a knock. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. My name is my super not the reason. In my wakaira, kwekwa. Akwa fule for na bania. Eku mugo jembe wilo. I walk out come up from Money Plaza. I take him back to Bubbles Plaza. I walk out to City Center. I take him back to Villa Toscana. I see some people wanna go rokoto. I see some people then they go popo. I go to Ghana then they go rokoto. I say for Togo then they go popo. Give me one bottle, one bottle of alcohol. Make I drink away my sorrows. Make I shaky shaky the go. Because to if you want the reason,
in my super not the reason.
Life is no easy, brother.
In my super not the reason.
I dig it, I dig it, I put a knock. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. My God, in my super not the reason. I dig it, I dig it, I put a knock. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. I dig it, I dig it, I challenge. I need everybody in the house to join me. Make with a shake 'em, small, small. Let's go. Ojare koko. Hey, ukuma baby. Hey, ojare koko. Hey. I see some people wanna go rokoto. I see some people don't they bum bum bum. I go to Ghana then they go rokoto.
Hey, hey.
I say for Togo then they bum bum bum.
Hey, hey.
Give me one bottle, one bottle of alcohol. Make I drink away my sorrows. Make I shaky shaky the go. Because if you want the reason,
you must be one of the reason.
Life is no easy, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, can I Halloween from the good life. With someone is already tell him say, yeah, man.
It's been a long, 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 long time. Long, long, long time.
For the producer, hold your hand.
Come in. Na balu balu dale, na lelie na lelie oh,
si na balu balu baby, na naga mi na wewe tuwe, anja na balu balu dale,
j'aime j'aime j'aime,
utoka tulipo kutana, si jawai kufikiria tutachana, lakini tulipo pendana, ueleweki unaniumiza sana, hey, upendo gani na sikuoni baby, upendo gani upatikani honey. Upendo gani uniamini baby, balu balu balu. Upendo gani nasikuoni baby.
And that was our Saturday music, and we hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for our Saturday commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections on African opinions on and attitudes toward the United States. Every week, I pay close attention to the headline and see to what extent the U.S. policymakers are addressing African issues. And at the same time, looking across the Atlantic and see what the Africans are saying in places like allafrica.com and a whole number of other sources. And particularly, I try to see to what extent those of us who have the opportunity to share our opinion about American policy towards Africa through the medium of the Voice of America. Today, I would like to share with the audience of the Voice of America some of the key issues I find relevant for us to look at America's policy towards Africa. Right now, most Africans who never heard about the Center for Disease Control and Prevention are now going to know this as part of their vocabulary, because American-African relations has been taken to the level of medicine, health, disease, and African affairs. So in the dictionary of most Africans today, the word CDC, Center for Disease Control, is going to be part of their vocabulary, because it links America to Africa. Just like during the days of Kennedy, the Peace Corps, which was a strange word for many Africans, was a new word coming out of the Kennedy narrative. Today, the Peace Corps is very much part of America's relations with Africa. There are thousands of Africans who benefited from the instructions of American teachers, whether they're teaching English, chemistry, mathematics, or algebra. Today, American doctors are very much involved in Africa. And President Obama has been very much involved telling the Africans when they came to town before the Ebola uprising or ravage of the African landscape. And he spoke to the UN people about it. And now the World Health Organization are very much involved. So the Ebola phenomena has really elevated American-African relations to a new theater of discussion. And coming out of the Africa Summit, unexpectedly, African-American relations has been very much affected today by the Ebola phenomenon, which is ravaging Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. And of course, the danger of Ebola has crossed the Atlantic. People are hearing it about Ebola in certain cities, particularly more recently, New York. So when we talk about Ebola as a disease, it takes you back to history. And you remember malaria, and the manner in which malaria affected European-African relations, to the point that in West Africa, it was called the white man's grave because of malaria. We didn't have quinine. But eventually, after a lot of work, quinine, that time the English were dominant in world affairs in Africa, and not the Americans, but through the expertise of scientists in Europe, eventually quinine was discovered. And it changed the whole relationship between Europe and Africa. But the mosquito became a very interesting insect, which played a very interesting part in the folklore, anthropology, sociology, history of Africans and Europeans. And of course, this was why Shaka Stevens, in his days of glory, would elevate the mosquito to the point of making a mosquito award in Sierra Leone. And it's very interesting today that in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, Ebola, a disease, a virus that could be traced back to a river in the Congo, would begin to have the same impact in West Africa as the mosquito was 200 years ago. So when we look at American-African relations from the lenses of history, epistemology, I'm not a doctor, but I know what doctors try to do in trying to understand diseases. But what is most important from the point of view of political anthropology, political history, political geography, it becomes very interesting for us to look at American relations with Africa in terms of medicine, in terms of science and technology. These are two important tools of human creation and development that are lacking in Africa. And the African leaders hopefully raised some of these issues when they met with President Obama. And President Obama, as he navigates the last 2 years of his presidency, has to devote a greater part of his resources to build scientific and technological bridges between the United States and Africa. America has all the tools. The Africans are in the same situation as other people in history. The spirit is willing, but flesh is weak. That's a historical narrative that goes back to the time of Jesus of Nazareth in the Hebrew experience. Today, when we look at American-African relations, we have to look at contemporary issues for Africa and see how Africans can look back at history and see what happened to other people as they struggle with natural disasters like tsunami in Indonesia and all those countries affected by tsunami, and all the calamities in Europe, the Black Plague, which killed almost half of Europe. So the Africans have to really work out a new deal in terms of governance so they can learn to govern themselves without foreign intervention. They have to develop transparency. So the political economy is very much reinforced by the moral economy. And these are very important developments. So when we look at American-African relations, and we are paying great attention to African opinions on and attitudes toward the United States, we underscore 2 points. One, how science and technology are going to be elevated to the point that African doctors will be able to address their own problems, just like American doctors are trying to tackle Ebola and make sure that it doesn't ravage American society. This is lesson number one. Lesson number two in American-African relations is that the Africans are now running up and down with cell phones, using tools that are now manufactured out of China. Those tools should be manufactured in Africa. If the Africans are in collaboration with Americans, the source of that knowledge that went to China, India, and elsewhere in the world, what has to be done now is for the African leadership to work out a new political mathematics. And that mathematics calls for new relationship with these United States. And that's the way it is today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nyang. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, producer Douglas Impuga, as well as our engineer for today, Curtis Bynum, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the best way to eat an elephant in your path is to cut him up into little pieces, meaning the best approach to solving a problem is to take it bit by bit, one at a time. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Ian Khama was sworn in for a second term as leader of Botswana on October 28th after the ruling Botswana Democratic Party retained its parliamentary majority in elections last week. Final results are in, and the BDP took 37 of the 57 legislative seats. It was the most closely contested election there in years, with three parties contesting constituencies in one of the most stable and democratic nations on a continent often roiled by conflict and government corruption. The United States congratulates the people of Botswana, who turned out in overwhelming numbers in their successful national parliamentary elections. International observers have declared the election free, fair, and transparent, the 11th such ballot since independence in 1966. With more than a dozen elections in nations around Africa in the coming months, Botswana has set a worthy example in democratic governance. The United States and Botswana enjoy a close friendship based on our shared belief in democracy and the rule of law. We look forward to deepening our relationship with the Botswana people and to continue working closely with the government.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.